H.R. 75 in the Senate of the United States passed March 15, 2016. Got a lot of whereases. Whereas Christians and other religious and ethnic minorities have been an integral part of the cultural fabric of the Middle East for millennia. Where ISIS is just killing people without regard. No, that's, I'm paraphrasing, of course. Killing everyone in their path. Whereas ISIS is specifically targeting the religious and ethnic minorities, intending to kill them or force them into submission, conversion, or expulsion, and a whole lot more whereases. But it's a non-binding resolution without, well, it's a hollow attempt, folks. This is what we've gotten. This is what America has given to the Assyrian Christians and others in the area. We have as our special guest tonight, Lieutenant Colonel Sargas Sangari, a man who's just an incredible leader, put together his website, of course, the Near East Center for Strategic Engagement. It's not just a website. It's a movement. He is, I don't want to say single-handedly, but with God's help, with our help, with everyone's help, is going to be a formidable, as already is, but it will be a more formidable force in the Middle East, standing up for those being slaughtered, those victims of genocide. And I say that because I just want to drive home how important this broadcast is, how important these men are. And these men don't just stand in the gap for those women and children in the Middle East. They stand in the gap for the contents of the Holy Bible, for God's Word, for the people, and for the cultural and for the spiritual roots out of Syria. It's just amazing. Now, again, we are so honored to have Lieutenant Colonel Sargas Sangari, two commanders as well, on with him. Go ahead, Eric, play this.
I'm an American. I'm a Christian, just like you. Now let's do whatever we can to make a difference. The soldier in the wall is asking you to listen. I'm an American. I'm a Christian.
There it is. An American, a Christian. There it is. An American and a Christian. And us, folks, and he's asking us to listen. Lieutenant Colonel Sangari, go ahead and welcome back, and just jump right in here, and let's continue our conversation.
Well, I just want to finish this up because, look, and it's important because, look, Congress is the only entity that can make something legal or illegal. And without them wanting to make a stand, regardless of their Republican, Democrats, or independents, with the Assyrians and the Christians, then we're not going to be able to save the Christians on our age. The only thing the Assyrians can do right now, and we have told everybody multiple times, we got to do it on our own. We cannot rely on the United States at any level from any party to step in and support. Look, the House resolution, we had proposed adding the name Assyrian in the first chapter of it. They took the name Assyrian out. They left the Yazidi, Turkmen, Shebek, Kurds, other groups. We recommended that in the process of the concurring resolution to add the name Assyrians. They took Assyrians out, they left Yazidi, Turkmen, Shebek, Kurds, and other groups. We said in the third paragraph, put the name Assyrian in. They took the name Assyrian out, they put Yazidi, Turkmen, Shebek, and Kurds, and other groups. We said add this paragraph, and the paragraph that we recommended read, wherein the Assyrians and Yazidis have been documented as having undergone violent persecution at a 50-year interval for the past 2,000 years, and the Assyrians and the Yazidis have over the past century suffered mass killings, persecution, and forced deportation from their historical lands in 1915, 1918, 1922, 1933, 1940-45, 2010, and as of recent as 2014 in the Khabar River Valley and the Assyrian Nineveh Plain and Mount Sinjar, The Assyrians and Yazidis continue to experience a silent cultural genocide to eradicate the Assyrian nation and the Yazidi people. They took that entire paragraph out. And in the first draft, they even took the 1933 massacre out, where it was the first time a army, literally in Iraq, killed the Assyrians, not because they were just Christians, but they were also because they were Assyrians, killed its own people. Now, this is the Congress, folks, that is saying that we are standing by the Christians. I gotta tell you, if you were standing by the Christians, and one of my assignments was I was the director of Host Nation Affairs in Kuwait. It takes 10 hours to send one brigade set of equipment up to the north. It takes two ODA teams to be sitting with the Assyrian army right now in the Assyrian Nineveh Plain and the village of Bakufa to protect them. They don't even want to give you two ODA teams. They don't want to give you any equipment. They don't want to give you any support. So what do? They remove your name. They dump it in there somewhere. You'll see it in the new House resolution, which is non-binding. But other Christians, well, Assyrians were Assyrians before they were Christians. And they take everyone else who, in all those massacres, have actually participated in massacring the Assyrians, and they declare that there's a genocide taking place against those ethnicities. So even when we try to even represent on behalf of the other minorities, in the case of the Yazidis, to be recognized, they even remove the Yazidis. Look, Assyrians are dying. The root of Christianity is dying, and is dying under America's watch. Why the commander came here this time, and we were asked, how come you're not back up in D.C. talking to the State Department, was because we had our discussion with State Department, we had our discussion with DOD, we've had our discussion with Congress. State Department has said you got to go be under the Shia of Iraq for you to receive any support when it comes to funding, because our SOP, Standard Operating Procedure, is much more important than your ethnicity. Or you have to go be under the Sunni Muslim Kurds because their lobby groups have funneled a lot of U.S. dollars, taxpayer dollars that have been given to them to make multimillionaires back into the coffers of Congress, who forces congressmen to say, I will choose to recognize genocide for them. I will not choose to recognize a genocide based on where the Assyrians should be recognized amongst others as equals. And then the DOD can only execute what the state and Congress want them to execute. So that's the bottom reality. The reason the commander came here this time was to appeal for financial support, and that's the only way we could do it. And our support has come through the United Assyrian Appeal, and it has come from Americans at the local levels who have helped, whether it was $5 to $2,000. We've given money to the military families so that the soldiers can go fight. I think with that said, I'm going to make sure I give an opportunity for Lewis and Matthew to speak, and then give an opportunity for the commander to talk also.
Your call, sir. Go ahead.
We'll go ahead and we'll talk to Lewis. He's downrange. He'll be able to explain to you exactly what's going on, and then we'll go to Matthew.
Thank you, sir. The commander downrange, go ahead. You're up.
Roger that. You may not be able to hear me very well. I'm actually in Iraq. So I'm not sure if there's any problem with the signal. You guys aren't coming through.
We can hear you.
Okay. I don't have a lot of time because we're on alert here. I'm actually on the berm in the overwatch position that I usually take with my friends down in the trench here. But I've been following the conversation best I can. First thing I'd like to say is, you know, out here, I can give a brief of what we face as volunteers, as well as Lake Nosha as a whole. I myself am not an agent of policy. I stopped being an agent of policy when I got out of the service. I'm here specifically to help the Christians and all of the people in this specific region against Daesh, the Islamic State. and that's my motivation for being here. I support Dwight Gnosha all I can because I am a Christian. But for the most part, again, I'm here on behalf of the West, you know, to counter the Islamic State.
Well, thanks for being here. And
yes,
all the way from Iraq, fighting a battle that is so important, one of the most important battles in this day and age, as the Christians are under attack in many nations, but specifically with the Arab Spring and the power vacuum there, and the Western policies versus what we see on the ground.
Joe, I mean, platitudes aside, Commander, how can we, our listening audience, we as an entity, a broadcasting entity, help you right now? I mean, we obviously we can't grab an AK-47 or an AR-15 and get out there, but what can we do for you right now? You who are standing on alert, facing the enemy in Iraq, God bless you, talking to us. What can we do for you right now?
Well, I mean, for the most part, understanding this conflict, understanding, you know, obviously the Christian aspect, about the threat that the Islamic State poses to the rest of the world, you know, surrounding the surrounding nations as well as the United States, and just realize how important groups like, you know, Dwight Gnosha, as well as all the fighters who are out here, you know, understanding the importance of them holding them back here at this point. And I understand the focus is on the Christians, so for Dwight Gnosha, you know, obviously, they need a lot of funding and support. You know, out here, as a Western volunteer, we buy our own weapons, we buy our own equipment. Dwight Gnosha provides a little bit, but they can't do very much. And that's because they have their own fighters that they need to supply. We don't have a lot of equipment. We have to work with the partnered forces out here, the KDP. You know, on the front line here, because that's the only option that we have. And, you know, they can defend their villages and everything, but other than that, they can't, obviously, right now the policy is that the front line is on a standstill, but honestly, if we were to go and we were to face and go into the towns that are owned by these Assyrians, it would be very difficult for us. They definitely need the funding and the support, and not only that, but the relief effort that they do for Assyrian families as well.
Okay, so we have number one. Obviously, you need funds because, I mean, the fighters need funds under you. And number two, the families of the fighters need to be sustained as well. Where can, and I'm going to come right out and ask everybody, look, I vetted these gentlemen. These are heroes. They are our only line of defense right now.
Standing in the gap.
That's right. So how do we get help to you, sir, and your groups?
All right. Well, and if you want to support the volunteers, which is always up in the air, you know, we all have our individual, support networks. But we keep that to ourselves. You know, that's our effort to survive out here, as far as, you know, this program goes, it should be geared more towards Dwight Gnosha. And, I believe Emmanuel Kashaba, he's going to be the one that has the information on how to support. But that's okay. What I would encourage, you know, out here specifically, you know, we all have, you know, basic weapons and everything like that, but other than that,
how long do you plan to be in there, sir? I mean, you know,
I'd like to stick it out. This is my second time here. I was one of the original members of the group. Actually, the second member of the group, who is a Western volunteer, to come out back in, end of 2014. I came out in January 2015. I went back home in August, tried to settle back in at home, and, after an incident occurred here on the front, I decided to come back. So this time I'd like to stick it out till Mosul is complete. I'm not going to talk about the actual our roles in that operation, you know, just for OPSEC. But,
understood.
Once our role is complete in that, then I can go home.
Gotcha. Understood. Okay, Lieutenant Colonel, I'm going to toss it back to you, sir.
Lieutenant Colonel,
go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I think... there's a couple of ways that we get the support. For us, the support goes to the military families, and that support goes directly to the United Assyrian Appeal. So if you go to UnitedAssyrianAppeal.org, you'll see our information. You could also go to UnitedAssyrianAppeal.org directly through the Near East Center for Strategic Engagement site. The only thing that I have in the Near East Center for Strategic Engagement is a donate button, and it says, you know, we encourage you to support. So the UnitedAssyrianAppeal.org is a site that allows us to get funding. That money goes down to the multifamilies. As an example, how does that money work? Just so you understand. In March of last year, when we realized we're not going to get any help or any support, we created the United Assyrian Appeal. And on one occasion, we had a young man who was actually working in a province in Iraq, Sulaymaniyah, all the way on the border of Iran and Iraq. When we were able to get money to his family, in this case, at that time, it was costing us $650 for an core family. That meant a husband, a wife, and one child to sustain him. And that money fluctuates depending on what's happening in the region, how the dinar is dropping, what the U.S. dollar looks like, and what is happening politically and what is happening on the battlefield. So when we were able to give the money to the military family, the man who was working physically on an excavator down there in Sulaymaniyah was able to go and join the forces in front line. He was also at the same time able to allow his uncle and a nephew of that uncle to split the work requirements for a month operating the same equipment that he was operating. So literally, in this process, what we did was we fed one family, but we employed three individuals. One individual fighting with the forces down on the forward line of troops and asserting him a plane, and other two individuals, in this case, who were unemployed because they didn't have work, were able to do his job. So at least that way, we're able to give him 2 weeks of pay for each. So it's a process by which when money is transferred, it's still what we call, there's two colors of money, Title 10 and Title 22. I won't get into the detail. It becomes a Title 10 money, and it's still for humanitarian effort. So in that March, when that young man joined the force, he was a machine gunner. 2 days prior to him arriving to the battlefield, the ISIS forces had sent a man-packed drone over the Assyrian headquarters scout positions. And this is not a regular civilian drone you could buy off the market. This is an actual type of a drone that U.S. Special Forces and operation teams use. This is the capabilities that ISIS has. The night he arrived there, early in the morning, ISIS hit the elements, the Assyrian army elements in Bakufa with 123 millimeter mortars. They shelled them with 15 various different rounds. They conducted a 15-plus man attack against them. They had five suicide bombers in that attack that took place. Two were killed by the Assyrian forces. Two other individuals detonated early, and one was wounded and was dragged off the battlefield by other ISIS operators. And the ISIS operators that came against the Assyrian force, in this case, the Christian Assyrians, literally had these special forces man-packed ladders, the ones that you use to extend and climb to second-story buildings. When those individuals were killed on the battlefield, ISIS operators, they had brand-new U.S.-style type of Mali, and the same type of a Mali that I was using when we were fighting against Al-Qaeda in Iraq, and they had brand-new Russian AK-47s. Now, in the past, the Assyrian army would at least be able to secure those items off the battlefield from the individuals they killed. But because the Kurds are in such a shamble themselves under so much pressure, that they came in on the battlefield and actually took those weapons and took the body armor, too. So we couldn't even recover the bullets and weapons from the dead to use against the next attack. Now, that machine gunner, if he wasn't there that day and I hadn't supported that military family, that headquarters in Amman could have possibly been flanked and wiped out, and we'd have been talking more casualties. Look, United Assyrian Appeal, I want your listeners to understand, is an absolute policy failure. As an American lieutenant colonel who's fought downrange, who's been in combat areas of operation for 6 years in a row, who was on his first tour blown up 7 times, who has had friends lost their lives in Iraq, it's a shame that we had to create the United Assyrian Appeal. It's an absolute embarrassment. And every congressman needs to be embarrassed that we have to create United Assyrian Appeal in order to get money in the hands of a Christian Assyrians that have been an ethnicity that is a mainstay, main ally, Western-looking, majority of the population living in the West, who are fighting and dying on the battlefield, given a genocide because Congress cannot get its act together and be able to pass a binding resolution that recognizes also the Assyrians for the genocide that is taking place against them. Not just giving a token mention of them in the body of the letter that it becomes non-binding. In the most current resolution that is out there that is looking at funding Christians, is if you look at the calendar version of it, it doesn't mention Assyrian, it doesn't mention Christian, it doesn't mention any type of a force. There's a PDF that they're all walking around with, touting it as that this is the first time we're mentioning Christians, Assyrians, protection forces for the Christians in this PDF. But if you go to the calendar version, which is the only one that matters, they have done the same thing that they did to 75, House Resolution 5. They have gutted it. The Assyrians are going to get eradicated because of the inaction of Congress, and they're going to get eradicated because we are more apt under the current administration to cut and run out of that area. All we understand is that the area is one big gigantic playground that now Russia is playing in, Turkey is playing in, Kurds are playing in, and the Shia and Sunni are playing in. So we need the dollars, folks, unfortunately. Because if you don't have the dollars, we cannot function downrange, and we cannot keep this low safe haven that has been established open. If the dollars are not there, the Assyrian army eventually will not be able to move forward with the type of mission it has done before. So please go to UnitedAssyrianAppeal.org and donate whatever you can. It's your hard-earned taxpayer money. You worked hard for it. First, spend it on your family before you spend it on us. Take care of your bills before you take care of us. But if you get the chance, please help. With that, I'm going to have the commander talk to you a little bit.
Thank you so much.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, commander, go ahead.
We got about 2 minutes before the break.
What I want to say... really, that in the Bible, Matthew 12:41, Jesus Christ say, "The man of Nineveh will stand up at the judgment with the generation and condemned for the repented at the preaching of Jonah. And now one greater than Jonah is here." What I want to say from this, we must make the Bible and the Jesus Christ, every word, every single word in the Bible from Old Testament and New Testament become truth in that area.
Amen.
For that we are asking for help, and we are asking to stay at that area in our historical land without any help from the people if we don't see the help from the government, at least the people can let us be there. They can help us to stay there with our families. Another time, we don't want to be refugees. We don't want to be immigrate to any other country. We want to live in dignity with our religion, with our Christ in that area. We pick up the Christ and we bring too many countries. We pick the Christianity till China, till India. This is what the history of Assyrian talking about. Our church do this. Our religion give us the hope and give us the strength to go forward for that.
Okay,
absolutely.
That was greatly timed. I love that. And folks, we are going to stand with these gentlemen at the conclusion of the program. We will be donating for the families, for the initiative here, UnitedAssyrianAppeal.org. It's in the chat feature. It's also going to be featured on our website.
And for those of you who can't afford to donate money, prayers are definitely needed. As the Lieutenant Colonel quoted Matthew 12:41, it talks about the men who repented due to what Jonah did. And how that can happen today if we repent. Folks, we'll be right back.
The Hagman and Hagman Report. You're listening to a very special broadcast today. We've got very special guest, Lieutenant Colonel, retired from the U.S. military, Sangari. I can talk. Again, we have with us retired Lieutenant Colonel from the U.S. Army, Sargis Sangari. Two commanders, one downrange, actually on alert in Iraq.
If you can believe that.
Yes, he was on. He gave us an update from the front lines. Here he is, an AR or some similar weapon in one hand and a cell phone in the other. You don't think this is an important broadcast, folks? It most certainly is.
As we get back to these gentlemen, just a quick matter of breaking news pertaining to Syria. Breaking: U.S. occupation of Syria now official. This dated yesterday, goes on to say this is a historic and dangerous development which only increases the chances of total war. And it talks about the U.S. occupation of boots on the ground over the last 24 hours, as the U.S. has made it clear that they are going to have an occupational force in Syria.
Lieutenant Colonel, how does this affect, or does it, your efforts, your stratagem?
You're gonna get our American boys killed. You're gonna get those guys killed. Look, we asked for support from the U.S. government before 26 February 2015, when the Khabar River Valley was cleansed out. If you were going to fight as a Christian in Syria, and if any of the targets were going to be supported in Syria, those targets should have been supported prior to the Khabar River Valley being cleansed out. Russia had one wanton desire since Tsar Alexander. And that was to be able to have a footprint in a warm water port. What they were able to achieve under Putin now has been the ability of establishing not just one, but possibly two warm water ports in Syria, and have extended their air bases, have the Duma recently approved moving larger weaponries into the region. Now, as we were conducting tier 1 and tier 2 level missions, even in Syria, when the U.S. initially, under President Obama, mentioned that we are going to send 50 SF troops into Syria, the Assyrian army was the only Christian militia that said we are not going to participate in those, in that fighting. And it wasn't because we didn't want to support the U.S. Our main point to the American policymakers was, you're coming in late. Those areas that you want to go fight in are actually areas that ISIS, given its political structure of what it was dealing with at that time, were areas that were going to be non-consequential to them. So what they were going to use those areas for, to trap the U.S. forces into a larger fight. Now, other Christian militias, because they were desperate, said we're going to go fight. They went into that fight, but for us, for the Syrian army, our recommendation was from the tactical commanders, all you're going to do, U.S., is if you want to come help us now, which is too late, to take back the areas that is going to cost more money and more bloodshed to take for the Christian Assyrians, is that ISIS is going to pull back out of those areas, is going to use us like a worm on a hook, and then is going to use us to leverage to draw in the U.S. Special Forces to a larger fight. So they could kill as many SF forces as possible and to draw United States into a larger fight in Syria. United States has lost its footprint in the region. Syria has been an absolute chaos. Initially, YPG was working with Assad regime, we were funding money to. Recently, they've decided to fight against each other. Russia has stepped in now to be the power broker between these two, to bring him to a peace talks tables, which are going to start in the next few days. Russia is not doing that because it loves the YPG, although it uses them when it wants to. It is starting this process in order to be able to defend the Assad regime. As the Russians have gone ahead and now struck a deal with Turkey, Turkey understanding that U.S. has abandoned it in the region and is not going to support it in the long run, given the fact that we have empowered the Shia and the Iranian footprint within the region, you have literally lost your allies. So the only thing you had remaining were these Kurdish YPG, and as of today, Turkey started bombing Kurdish positions in the areas where these Kurds had liberated, believing that they were going to have a safe haven for themselves in the future. Well, guess what? You haven't just lost Turkey. You have lost Syria. You have lost the Christian footprint in Syria. You have now lost the YPG, who are going to get absolutely hammered by Russia, Turkey, and others in the region. You have lost your ally, Israel, because Israel has to worry about this border protection in Syria, given the fact that you've allowed Russia to take that footprint. You're not going to gain it back. Look, you have to have enduring partners. If the Assyrian army and the Assyrians were not enduring partners to the United States, they would have said, yeah, come on along. Let's go. We'll go fight. Knowing full fact that you were going to get sucked into a larger fight. The fact that we said it's too late now, you should have been with us when we told you to be with us, goes a long way for a force that is basically feeding itself barely out of pocket. And it's telling you, stay out of Syria now. Work on your other relations. And I'm going to tell you, if Syria goes bad, Barzani from the KRG has recently been asked to go to Iran to have meetings there. He was recently also in Turkey. What does that mean? You just lost the Kurds. So who does the United States have? The Kurds are going to go with the Russians, and they're going to go because they're going to get pummeled into the ground by Russia, by Turkey, by Iran. And they're going to have to flip to the Russians. They have no choice anymore. In the past, they've been friends with them. It's an easy transition for them. You don't have Turkey. Iran doesn't care about you. The militias are running and taking over the entire area. Islamists, regardless of who they are, have a large footprint. There's a recent law right now, just so you understand why it's important for Syrian Christians not wanting to be under the Iraqi governmental structure without being a part of a federalized Iraq. The law says that if your mother or father converts to Islam and you're under 18, you automatically have to convert. So here's the United States now pushing the Christians to go underneath those structures. The only ones you have in the region are the Assyrians. The only one you have in the region are the Assyrian army. The only one you have in the region is a person and a group that says, we want to be your, you know, enduring allies. And what are you doing to them? You're pummeling them yourself. While you're still trying to hitch your wagon to forces that have failed you in the region. If they were capable, why are you sending your special forces to go fight and die for them again in Syria? If they were capable, why are we losing our special forces going in and trying to save hostages in northern Iraq? Why are we losing our Navy SEALs that they're getting shot at close range and tell us go off if they're capable? They're not capable. So if they're not capable, stop. Take a deep breath, take a step back, and understand U.S. needs to find capable partners on the ground. Syria is going to be a dead trap for the United States. And if they decide to put forces on the ground, all Russia is going to do is pound them. Pound them, and I don't know what our response is going to be. Enough of losing our boys.
Yeah, absolutely. So are we, Lieutenant Colonel, because of your U.S. military experience and your high rank, are we fighting right now a proxy war against Russia? I mean, is that what this is coming down to? And I don't want to oversimplify it, but, I mean, from what you just said, it certainly would appear that way to me.
Yeah, I mean, Russia is your biggest enemy. They're your first enemy. So now you're fighting a proxy war, but you're doing a lousy job of it. I hate to say it, you should have never been in this position. We've lost too many young men downrange. We've shed too much blood for us to have been in this position. Proxy war is not fought well by us. Russia knows how to fight proxy wars. Russia recently bombed 3 hospitals. You think they cared about who was in those hospitals? They would care less if it was Assad's people, YPG, or Christians. They would bomb them because all they care about is their warm water port. United States, if you're not going to fight proxy wars to win, then it's useless. You're just expending time and treasure again. The reason I think they're trying to extend their footprint in Syria really to try to put some pressure on those tactical nodes that tie Al-Raqqa and Mosul, and by doing so, they believe that they can fight a easier fight than Mosul. Right now, the current administration is rushing the fight to Mosul because they want to make sure it's actually executed in fall before the election, and all they're going to do is get a lot of people killed there. The Iraqi army and the Iranian militias that we are supporting currently through our bombing efforts are not capable of executing that fight. They don't know the internal issues of how Mosul is going to shape up. They don't even have a plan after Mosul is cleared. All you're doing is leading to more bloodshed between these groups, and they're not going to forget it. The problem for the Syrians is we're stuck. We're stuck in the middle because the U.S. just doesn't want to support us at any level. I'll tell you, as I mentioned previously, the 2017 SFOP bill, which is being hailed as being this great piece of legislation that's supposedly going to support and give money in 2017 to the Syrians, possibly, if you look at the one that is on the calendar, it doesn't even mention the name of Syria. So we could wait till 2017. By then, it might be too late. We got refugees in camps. We have individuals being bombed all the time. We got forces that are barely holding their footprint. And we got U.S. policymakers are stumbling their way through the region and not knowing literally what they want to have as a final outcome. If the final outcome is to turn the area to the Russians, then go ahead, get involved in Syria. If the outcome is not to turn over the Middle East to the Russians, then really think about whether or not you're supporting the right people on the ground. It goes back to us right now being here for public support, needing money to survive, and really requesting that money in order to be able to keep at least the Syrian army on the ground, where you have a partner who's been very capable, proven it on a battlefield, never came and asked you for dollars, said just give me the support and the training, and you couldn't even muster that. You have the greatest military in the world. I know I fought in it. You have the greatest equipment in the world. I know I've used it. You have money that you could throw at any problem. Trust me, I've used it, and sometimes we waste a lot of money downrange. The two other pieces that you need are synced military and synced government leadership. When that doesn't exist, it's a leadership issue. And I don't really see right now, from the perspective of Syrians, who can come and fix these problems over the next 4 years, or who can sink these efforts? Because you have to make a decision. Are you willing to allow Russia to take over that region? If it is yes, let everybody know, because that's where it's headed. If it's no, then you cannot just do these little print pricks here. Biden's going to Turkey tomorrow to talk to Erdogan. Do you think Erdogan's going to listen to Biden? Or he's going to say, oh, now the United States is here, I'm going to change my mind, I'm going to support U.S., and I'm not going to flip to the Russians, as he has done? No. Do you think the Kurds are going to not hedge their bets with the Russians now, given the fact that they know that the jig is up and that possibly that they're losing ground? No. So who are you fighting for when you go into Syria? For the United States or for others?
The answer to that question, I think, if you go to Lieutenant Colonel Sargis Sangari, who's our guest speaking now, if you go to his website, that's the Near East Center for Strategic Engagement. The web address, as listed in our program description, is nec-se.com. Watch the videos there. Watch, as well as the most recent video posted yesterday. If you watch that, he does a great job of explaining all of this in exquisite detail, in my view. Lieutenant Colonel, I totally agree, by the way, with respect to Biden and Turkey and all of this. If I can ask one question that I was left with, and after watching the videos and reading on your website, but I want to bring this from the people to you. Benghazi, Libya, the takedown of Libya. You intimated at this earlier. That whole operation, or was that whole operation, as we had claimed, to arm what is now ISIS, to take out Assad, and did this contribute immensely to this problem that we're facing today?
The decisions that were made based on economic requirements. And that's why you have to have your country's economy strong. When your country's economy is strong, then you're not going to fall into these traps. The United States put itself in a position where it realized Europe's about to collapse economically. Our money and our debt was tied to foreign nations. If it wasn't for Japan coming in and actually buying our debt in October of 2014, we probably would have been under pressure from China. Iran realized that we were having problems, so Iran used our debt against us. That's why they were able to flip such a deal for themselves. And when they did it, they basically lured us in under the belief that we were going to have first access to their markets. And then right off the bat, the Europeans, who were supposed to stand by us, ran to Iran and said, listen, we want to be the first ones to have access to your markets. So what happened? U.S. was stuck on the outside again. The entire coalition that was supposed to work on this process of developing the Iranian markets over the next 20 years basically failed. So our debt is now in the hands of the Japanese, and it's been there. And Japan cannot sell it. If it sells it and sells it short, it will affect our economy here again. So Japan is holding it, but how does Russia force Japan and force our hand? At the same time Russia moves into Syria, it's amazing how suddenly North Korea, who's an ally of Russia, puts pressure on Japan. And suddenly you see expansions from China, who is part of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, expand its footprint, where it becomes a threat to not only Japan, but Australia and other possible footprint for economic development in the future in those regions. The reason why now you have bombers that are capable of delivering nuclear bombs sitting in Guam is because U.S. has been playing from behind. They've been getting checkmated. So to go back to your question of what happened with Libya, why Syria fell as it did, it was tied to economics. It was tied to economics. And those economics now are still driving the larger foreign policy for the United States. U.S., under the current administration, had a belief that if they adapted to the model that the Chinese had presented, that it's really economics, it's not the people, that you could have this world where United States could be able to have a very capable economy tied to the rest of South America. At the same time, China would be able to prosper itself in Asia, while everybody competed in North Africa for resources, not thinking that China has had a large footprint going back to their 50-year plan in Africa to begin with. And then the Middle East, with the new redesign coming up, we'll be able to satisfy and help everybody to include Save Europe. Europe's done. You killed Europe. You made the wrong economic deal with Iran. Israel in itself right now, you put Israel in a position where Israel has pivoted to Russia. And Israel now is pivoting to the Asian economies. In the next 15 to 20 years, Israel probably will do more business with Asia than is capable of doing business with Europe. You have put yourself in a position where you have not just lost tactical footprint, you have lost an entire footprint in the region. Now, taking it back to the Middle East, everything you have done has put the Christians in a position that the root of Christianity is going to get wiped out. And you did it because you thought you were making smart economic decisions for the long run as you looked at globalizing this entire global economy to the benefit of whomever. It definitely hasn't been for the minorities. The minorities, whether it be Yazidi or Syrian, are getting absolutely pummeled in the region because when you allow Russia to come in, Russia comes in and brings with it the capabilities of how it controls a region, which means I bomb hospitals, regardless of who's in it, and I put people in prison camps if they don't listen to me. Same thing with when you bring China into a region. They come in and say, you go sit in a prison camp and make factory items for me. America literally, in this equation, under this administration, sold its soul, thinking that economically I'll benefit. Not only are you losing now economic footprint, you're losing political footprint, you're losing political leverage. And if you wanted to get to a point where the future wars were going to be simpler wars, you just made them bloodier. You know, we have congressmen who sit here and say, no child left behind. I've had young Assyrian school girls who haven't had education for 2 years. I have kids in refugee camps where others from other ethnical groups come along and dump scorpions in their camps to see how many of them get bit. I have Assyrians living in parking lots in villages downstream where upstream they defecate and urinate in their waters. I have Assyrians who literally cannot feed themselves, who are fighting on the front lines, and you're telling them the only way I'm going to support you is if you do what I tell you and go register with Ministry of Defense, go fight on the Hashishabi, and go be in the front lines and get killed in Mosul at no benefit to you strategically and at no benefit to me. This is absolutely ridiculous and is embarrassing. And every single individual who walks the halls of Congress should be embarrassed about what they have allowed this country to get to. Shame on you for embarrassing our country. Shame on you for putting yourself under everyone else's footprint. Shame on you for being allies with individuals who don't care about you. We lost too many friends downrange. And I personally will not allow that to happen. The Syrian army has a footprint. The Syrian army is fighting. You need to support them. If the U.S. Congress is not going to support them, then we ask the people of the United States, please support us so we can at least hold the breach open until somebody understands what's happening in the region. I want to give a chance for Matthew to talk. I want to give a chance for the commander to talk. I hope that kind of makes you understand where we are when it comes to the critical points of why the Assyrians have to be there and what is happening physically to us.
Yes, very much so. And we should bring Matt on right after the break. We got a break in about 1 minute. And when we come back, we will bring and hear from Matt. And folks, again, we are talking with some gentlemen who are on the front lines in Syria dealing with the Islamic State.
This is the Assyrian Christian Army. Right, right.
Dealing with the instability, the war-torn, human right atrocity-filled areas of the Middle East, and standing up for Christians, protecting those people who belong at their home country, and they are one of the few who are standing for the right reasons, not for defense contracts, not for notoriety or popularity, but to save, to stand in the gap to save the lives of their fellow Christian neighbors.
This is a war for survival and for the survival of Christianity. You know, that's a big picture. I mean, understand the big picture. A view from cruising altitude, there it is. And the Lieutenant Colonel explained it very well. Well, on the other side of this break, the commander's back for additional discussion. You know, folks, I heard a song, kind of a throwback to the 80s. We need a hero. I think it was the name of the song. You're talking to heroes, or you're listening to heroes, I should say. And I don't use that term lightly. They're on the front lines. You heard them.
That's right. This is a very special show, and we want to thank our guests for coming on. Folks, go to nec-se.com for their website, Near East Center for Strategic Engagement. We'll be right back.